You are listening to Faithless Brewing, a Magic the Gathering podcast for the Spike Rogue. Each week, we go deep on brewing spicy new decks geared at tournament play. We put our creations to the test in Magic Online leagues and share our findings on the air. This week on the Roundup, we check in on the state of the modern format, the continued dominance of Hogak Ridgevine, and the rise of creature-based combo. Can Devoted Vizier and Jeskai Saheeli fight the Graveyard Menace? Plus, a tournament report with Rainbow Niv-Mizzet, and early impressions of Core 2020 spoilers. After that, on the flashback, our testing results with Ranger Captain of Eos, including a solemn vow to never speak the name of Knight of the Reliquary ever again. Finally, in our brew session, we go deep on all things tempo. Is that an icy winged snake? Or an ingenious ninja in disguise? All of that and more is coming up on this edition of Faithless Brewing. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Welcome to episode 8 of Faithless Brewing. I am David Robertson, joined as always by Dan Schreiber. He is Caveman Online. Dan, how's it going?
I'm doing great, Dave. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. And Damon Alexander from the West Coast. What's going on, Damon?
Hey, not too much. I'm just getting geared up for Magic Fest Seattle this week. I'm pretty excited.
Yes, sir. So what format is that?
Basically, you can play in any sort of MCQ you want, but my plan is to jam as much Modern Horizons Sealed as possible, featuring an MCQ on Thursday, and then a day 1A experience, and then a day 1B experience, and hopefully a day 2 experience, but fingers crossed on that one.
How much Sealed have you gotten in on Modern Horizons? I know it's kind of gotten a lot of props as being a very good limited format.
Yeah, this is one thing where I consider myself to be, you know, not as diligent as like a pro, in the sense that I just like drafting more. I could do a draft of MH or a sealed pool of MH. Like, I don't know, man. It's going to be drafts. I built a couple sealed pools with some friends at work and we play them, but not like a tournament experience. But drafting it's been a fun format.
Well, lots of news in the Magic world. Dan, you took an old chestnut to a 1K this week. Mr. Niv-Mizzet was ruling the skies. Do you want to talk about your experience there?
Yeah, so I was playing at SCG IQ on Saturday. I thought I would take Niv-Mizzet for a spin, one of our old favorites. I hadn't actually had a chance to play him in paper yet. So the tournament kind of fell at like an awkward time. Technically, the release date for Modern Horizons was Friday, so the day before the tournament. Now, of course, we've been playing it online for, you know, a week at least, and you know, everyone knew about this Hogak Ridgevine deck. But just because of that, I think there's some written or unwritten rule about like if you pre-order a card, it can't ship until Friday from like most vendors. So like I had pre-ordered cards, like I could have built the Hogak deck, but the cards didn't get put in the mail until Friday. So I was thinking like maybe no one will actually have that deck. Maybe this would be like my last chance. Just enjoy.
Nice, calm.
Yeah, so that was the hope anyway. I mean, I knew it was possible that, you know, if someone had just bought a bunch of boxes or gone to their pre-release and traded for them or hit up the local stores, that they would have the deck. And ultimately, three people showed up with the deck, and all three of them made top 8, of course.
That's what I was telling Dan. Dan told me somewhere early in the tournament, he was like, yeah, three people showed up with Hogak. And I was like, oh, yeah, five slots for the rest of you.
So you're playing for the top 5.
Exactly. Playing for 4th through 8th place. And it ended up being a smaller turnout, so just 5 rounds. And I think I finished 2-2-1. So I didn't do very well, but Niv-Mizzet actually did great. I kind of punted a 1 round away. I found a losing line. I had a lot of great options in front of me, but I found a line to let him Blood Moon to lock me out of the game. And the other loss was against the Hogak deck, where I don't consider that Niv-Mizzet's fault. Sure. That's a tough matchup. The draw was against Izzet Phoenix, where you know we just ran out of time. We were both out of resources, and I think I probably sided out one too many copies of Niv-Mizzet. So I was actually pretty encouraged by the performance of the deck. I didn't change it too much.
So you didn't make too many like sideboard allowances to a possible Hogak heavy metagame.
I did. I added a couple sort of nice cards. I added a Kaya's Guile to the main deck, which is important because if you're casting Bring to Light, there isn't really a card you can cast that, or a card you can find off that, that cleans up the graveyard. So Kaya's Guile does that.
Yes, great.
And
cool.
The second card that I added was Anafenz of the Foremost, which is like a stronger Yixlid Jailer. And it actually prevents death triggers from happening with a Bridge from Below, and can't be like picked off by a Dark Blast if they're running that. So those were like two cards I was excited to have access to in the deck, and I left them on my dining room table when I was rushing out the door in the morning. So they just weren't in my list.
Sure. And I think it is important to know it's not intuitive. You think of Anafenza as this multicolor card, so Niv-Mizzet can find it, but Niv-Mizzet can, of course, only find specific guilds, so it's not findable by Niv-Mizzet, but can be brung to light for, etc.
Yeah, I think one thing that occurred to me as I was pondering my death as my Hogak opponent was just going off and producing like 100 power was like maybe the idea that you can bring to light to find copies of like important cards, like that works when you're playing against a slower deck where you can interact with them maybe once or twice and then you have a window to get to five mana and get that bring to light down for the onboard ego or whatever it is. It doesn't work when you just need a card like right away.
Yeah.
Okay. So I was thinking like Ela Damri's Call might actually be a better fit right now than Bring to Light, because that way, like if there is a cheap hate creature that you just need now, like you can call for it on turn two and you'll have your Anafenza on turn three. And by virtue of being a two color tutor spell that can fill the chaining Niv-Mizzet's engine in the same way that Bring to Light does, it's a little bit less mana efficient because now you're tacking two mana onto the cost of Niv-Mizzet, whereas Bring to Light is free. It's five mana to cast and Niv-Mizzet already costs five. The deck could be rebuilt around that if we felt like it was important to get some cheaper creatures faster, and that might free up the Simic slots for like Ice Fang Quetzals. But I haven't quite built that out yet, but that's something I'm interested in maybe playing around with.
So the metagame has been kind of responding to Hogak, and one of the ways it has done this is, like you say, Dan, people have taken sort of existing copies of combo-rific sort of decks and tried to sort of just race. So, Damon, I know you played kind of the new stock Devoted Vizier list that people have been playing. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. This list, for those of you who are not familiar with it, fundamentally gets an infinite combo going using the two cards Devoted Druid and Vizier of Remedies. So Devoted Druid lets you untap, produces a green mana by tapping, and then you can untap by putting a -1/-1 counter on it. But Vizier says don't put -1/-1 counters on your guys, so you just get infinite green mana. You can then convert this into a win, ideally through Walking Ballista, which you just make arbitrarily large. And then other ways you can win are through Shalai or Finale of Devastation, which will give all your guys, you know, +50/+50 in haste. And so the deck actually has been around for a long time in Modern. I've never really played it before recently, but it picked up a lot of steam recently because the deck, first off, got some new cards with Ela Damri's Call and Finale of Devastation, which are, generally speaking, a little bit leaner, meaner tutors than Court of Calling, which was a previous gen tech. And secondly, this deck can be built to be a glass cannon that just goes really fast. And if there's one deck that suffers against a deck that can win on turn three, it's Hogak, because Hogak plays almost no interaction. And so when I played this matchup once, what happened is that if Hogak can't kill you on turn two, you kill them on turn three, because you go turn two Devoted Druid, turn three Vizier, win. And that sounds like Magical Christmas Land, but it really isn't. The deck can actually set that up quite reliably. One thing I learned, by the way, is that the list I was originally trying featured Rest in Peace. And then there was a new list that I found. I saw a tweet that Dan sent me about a guy who won a 1K with it that came, I think, ultimately from Edgar Magalhaes. I'm not sure I'm saying his name right.
It's pronounced something like Magalhaes. But he's just known as Edgar.
Okay. Yeah, so he's a famous Amulet Titan player. At least that's where I've heard of him. And his list featured Ravenous Trap. And I was like, I don't think Ravenous Trap is as good as Rest in Peace. But once I played the league, I really understood that you just need to survive through Hogak's turn three when you're on the draw and turn two when you're on the play. And Ravenous Trap will basically guarantee that, whereas Rest in Peace, sometimes it's too slow. Sometimes they just dump way too much into play on turn two if you're on the draw. Or alternatively, they can just preemptively Wisp Merit away. So that was an interesting thing to learn. The deck felt pretty good. It has issues against decks that play a ton of bolts, so somehow actually burn is a bad matchup because they just literally point burn spells at every single creature you play. I think there's ways to build your sideboard to handle those sorts of matchups, but it's a little bit tough, and I think blue-white control would also be tough. But this deck is a super powerful deck. What annoys me about it slightly is that it doesn't feel like it's a whole lot less degenerate than Hogak. The deck is also kind of ridiculous. Like a turn three kill with just infinite damage is just kind of powerful. And it's also not interactive. It's not like, doesn't use graveyard degeneracy exactly, but it's still kind of degenerate in its own way.
Yeah, I watched you play a couple of your rounds, Damon, and I should mention that you 5-0'd pretty convincingly, although your list didn't end up making it into the published deck dump. You know, you had Windswept Heath and Temple Garden, but it beyond that, it just didn't feel anything like what I think of as a green-white deck. Like, there was no attempt to play favorite creatures or even have a B plan. It was all the combo, just a bunch of tutors, great tutors. You had Eternal Witness to get the pieces back to, like, you know, just go again. You had Postmortem Lunge to just go again if they disrupt you. It worked really well. It was kind of scary and, I don't know, it was interesting and a little discouraging to watch. Like, oh, this is how you win right now in Modern. Don't even bother with three drops or anything like that.
Right. The deck in theory plays Thrun in the sideboard, but I never really figured out what the purpose of that was when you could just, you know, win the old-fashioned way with the infinite Ballista. For those of you that don't like clicking a whole lot, this deck is maybe not for you. It does require a ton of clicking on Modo. There's an interesting etiquette of, like, you need to show them that you have a win. Like, you can't just show them Druid plus Vizier. You need to show them a Ballista or a search spell. And then, in theory, a courteous opponent will concede, but not everybody on Modo either understands or feels like being courteous. And so you have to be prepared to grind them out.
That was very, very funny. I saw you attempt to do that to someone. You demonstrated the Ballista by playing it for a medium amount. And then, you know, paused and wait for them to concede. And then they wouldn't do it. So now you had to, like, now you had to do extra clicks because adding counter to Ballista
four mana cost you 4 mana each.
Yeah, we actually, it got interesting because Dan and I were chatting about this. So I played the Ballista for like 4, they're like 18 life. And then, you know, I think that at this point that the win is demonstrated. In paper, you would just say, hey, I'm going to do this loop, a judge would confirm it, and then you kill them and go on to the next game. But on Modo, it's not like that. And so then I was like, well, I'm not going to, you know, click to make, you do the math on you need 14 more damage, you need 4 times 14, then you do all the clicks on the Ballista. So I was like, I'm going to make the Ballista 10-10 and pass the turn. Which sounds risky, but the thing is that if they, like, untap and bolt you for lethal, then you just, in response to bolt on the stack, you go off and kill them. and so I, like, just passed the turn, and they passed it back, and I attacked them, and then I killed them. And we were wondering if that was, like, passive-aggressive or something. So any of you guys are Modo ethicists, please let us know.
I felt like justice was served to you when you refused to concede and made you click extra. You have to be willing to click it out if you're playing Infinite Combo. That's just the rules. That's the rules of Magic Online.
They can just hit F6 and get a sandwich.
But yeah, so that list, Edgar had been apparently doing very well with it. And I think, you know, as Damon was saying, he's really well known for his specialty in Amulet Titan. So he's kind of like a canary in a coal mine. If he's switched off Amulet to play this more degenerate thing, people are taking notice. Actually, the tweet that I sent you was Kelvin Chu, another player who is known for his affinity of, like, Bant midrange, and he's also just off of the Knight of the Reliquary stuff. I know, Dave, you were saying that just tonight you were trying to rent some Heliodamri's calls to run a list, and they were all
they only had one available at Mana Traders. They've had a hard time keeping them in stock, it looks like.
Devoted Druid is all over the 5-0 lists. It's kind of popping off right now. It's a strong response to the Hogak meta. Hogak is still doing well. It took first, second, and third at the Magic Online Challenge this weekend. So it's still out there. This is a good way to attack it.
And another way, Dan, that you kind of started playing around with a bit was sort of the Saheeli combo shell and then maybe adding some new cards to it.
Yeah, I wasn't that interested in the degenerate infinite combo of Devoted Vizier, so I went with a more classy degenerate infinite combo of Saheeli Rai and Felidar Guardian.
You want to have at least one mythic rare in your infinite combo.
Yeah. If I'm doing something Splinter Twin, like, I want to at least have blue and red sources in the deck. I mean, that's just, you got to respect the legacy. So I had been intrigued by a list that Ben Friedman had written about over at SCG that he had done really well with at the Invitational and at the a Modern 5K event or something at SCG Con last week.
Jim Davis was on a similar list and also top 8'd.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They were both playing lists within a couple cards of each other.
Yeah, plus or minus 3 cards or something.
Well, he described it as kind of a mashup of Super Friends in that it had Teferi Time Raveler to sort of protect everything that's going on, Saheeli, and then Narset to find the pieces. It's like that was kind of the core, plus then you had the Felidar Guardians to actually win. And the rest of the build was just sort of interactive cards in the Jeskai colors. Lightning Bolts, Path to Exile, Serum Visions, Lightning Helixes, and like a couple miscellaneous counterspells, that kind of thing. There was one slot that it seemed like Ben Friedman said he was unhappy with, and that was a slot that was like the miscellaneous two-mana cantrip, which he'd said that, you know, he'd tried Wall of Omens in that space, tried Spreading Seas there, and like they were both sort of okay, but he wasn't sure if they did anything. So I was thinking, well, I am really interested in this card, Watcher for Tomorrow from Modern Horizons, and this seems like the perfect place for it because the deck plays a lot of natural ways to blink the Watcher for Tomorrow. So if you're not familiar with this card, this is a 2/1 human wizard for one and a blue. It has the hideaway mechanic. So when it comes in, or when it enters the battlefield, you look at your top four cards and hide one of them away underneath the Watcher for Tomorrow. And then when the Watcher for Tomorrow leaves the battlefield, you get that card into your hand. And it can leave for any reason. It can be bounced, like with Teferi. It can be blinked with Felidar Guardian, or it can be exiled. Like if you play the Watcher and then follow up with Saheeli, you can -2 Saheeli to make a token copy of the Watcher. That token copy will then die at the end of the turn, and you'll get the card back.
Path to your own Watcher was pretty useful, I found.
Yeah. So you have these pieces, Path and Bolt, which are not necessarily useful in all matchups, but like because you have Watcher now, you have something useful to do with them. So that was my thinking. There's also like there's a slim possibility that the Watcher will die in combat. That's probably the rarest thing. Yeah, we nicknamed him Tomorrow Never Dies because he just like never dies in combat.
Yeah. One thing I didn't mention about the highway mechanic is that somehow along for the ride comes the fact that the permanent enters the battlefield tapped, which is apparently actually literally part of the mechanic itself, not just something that has been on all the hideaway cards so far.
I didn't mention it to you, Damon, because I did not realize that until I actually cast the card for the first time. I thought it was bugged. I was like, oh no, what's going on? So it does enter the battlefield tapped.
But if you play 2-drop, 3-drop Planeswalker on curve, you can have it untapped to protect your Planeswalker or die and get the card if you so choose.
Yeah, a few weeks ago before Horizons dropped, like having creatures with power was a big deal because you had to be able to pressure opposing Planeswalkers and that kind of thing. So if we ever return to that meta, like it's hard to kill him now, but that might not always be true. So I think I did a league with this, and the deck felt great. I think I ended up 4-1. I lost to Hogak in the last round, but it was a close match. And I think, Damon, you took this through a league as well.
I took it through 3 rounds of a league, and then my power went out, and luckily Dan was around to take over from there. I think I punted the first match against Amulet Titan just because I was new to the deck and I was new to some of the interactions. For example, Ashiok means that your opponent can't search their library from their stuff, but if you path their creature, they can search. And I was like, oh, I'm going to exile this Azusa, no problem. And then they go to search, and then they play a primetime next turn, and then that sucked. But I beat Red Phoenix in Affinity. It was just one of those things where, like, man, these infinite combos in Modern are just like, you know, whatever your opponent is doing, you just stop caring at some point, as long as it doesn't stop you.
Yeah, so, I mean, those two leagues were encouraging, and I think they showed off the strength of the concept. I'm not totally sure yet if Watcher for Tomorrow improves the deck or makes it worse or if it's kind of a wash, but it feels like really good to just look at your top four, pick one, and then do it again. Blink it, look at your top four, pick one. I mean, especially because, like, you know, some of your cards are worth so much more than the others. Like, the Planeswalkers are so good, and then you have this combo finish that, I mean, some of my matches, I was just like, I felt like I was impulsing every turn. But, I mean, then again, it's possible that, I think, Damon, you're saying you just couldn't seem to unlock the hideaway card in the games you were playing. So, if you
play turn 2 Watcher, and then I'd have, like, a hand with 2 lands and Watcher, and I would watch my way into, like, some more lands and some interaction. I was like, well, I'm not sure when this Watcher's going to die, so I don't know if I need to use it to hit a land drop or to get late-game interaction or to get a Planeswalker. Strange card. I'm still coming to terms with it.
He never dies. He's never going to die. You gotta do the work yourself to get the card. But, yeah, so that's maybe something I might play around with more. I think a lot of people are sort of interested now in Saheeli decks. There were a few different ones on the 5-0 deck dump today on Tuesday, including one that played the Saheeli combo with Teferi and had a Bring to Light Kiki Jiki Deceiver Exarch package just for like maximum redundancy. like Arbor Elf Utopia Sprawl to like speed it all into play. It was that's an interesting build, and I think the pilot of that had scored, I think, 3 5-0s with it in the past 2 weeks. He did a nice write up on the Modern subreddit, so shout out to him. Definitely interested in that build. But yeah, for people interested in this deck, I think Watcher for Tomorrow is a card to test.
I think Nassif also had a 5-0 list at the very beginning of the previous set with green. So his 2-drop that was drawing a card was Coiling Oracle. And he was also using the green enchantment, Nissa's Oath of Nissa.
Yeah, that's right.
As another blink target for your cat. It's possible you might want to replace that snake with the new snake if you wanted to and not play Watcher at all.
The Ice Fang?
Ice Fang Caudal, yeah. I don't know if there's enough basics to really turn it on most of the time, but having Flash is relevant in a deck that maybe wants to play Remand or some amount of counter magic interaction.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. That's one thing that I was a little bit confused about when I was playing the deck myself, was like all of my 3-drop plays are sorcery speed. My 1-drop is a Serum Visions, ideally, and that's a sorcery speed. But like my 2-drops are maybe counter spells, like if I'm playing Remands. So it's not clear like if you're supposed to have instant speed interaction on 2, or if you're just supposed to accept that you are a sorcery speed deck and like maybe play Force of Negation main or something like that. But yeah, having the Ice Fang being Flash, a Flash version of the Coiling Oracles, I think that's intriguing. That's promising for sure.
So I think that's kind of a rundown of Modern as it stands. I don't want to put anyone on the spot here, but I think we're expecting a card to be banned from Hogak at this point when the next banned and restricted announcement is made. But I mean, in the meantime, I guess it shows the power of Modern that people just, you know, sharpen up their knives and run an even more linear deck to try to compensate. You can't just sit around and wait for Wizards to ban a card. I mean, you gotta adjust.
Yeah, you actually do get an interesting kind of rock, paper, scissors meta in a sense that I feel like Devoted Druid actually has a pretty good Hogak matchup. I need to maybe do a lot more testing to be confident in that statement, but that's what it felt like. But then any deck with a bunch of interactions is going to have a good Devoted Druid matchup. And so you could have like a fair midrange deck beats up Devoted Druid. Devoted Druid beats up Hogak. Hogak beats up fair midrange. And then that might be like a stable meta that everybody has fun, maybe.
I'm not quite as convinced, but that's certainly a great way of thinking about it.
If you enjoy beating people up and or getting beat up, but yeah. Not much in between.
Yeah, there was a huge number of decks in the deck dump this week. So as much as Hogak is tearing things apart, there is a lot of diversity of what people are playing online.
That's very true. And it's unclear to me like why that's the case. Is it because we've integrated the leagues now? The friendly and competitive leagues are now just one big league? I think probably the majority of people out there in the league singular are not necessarily just trying to like grind tickets or with whatever the best deck is. They're like us. They want to explore. They want to like try out all these sweet new cards from Horizons and see how their favorite archetypes are doing and maybe brew something sweet. You can run a league and not face Hogak until the last round. You know, if you're doing well in the league, you'll probably get paired against Hogak in your 5th round. So that's been my experience so far.
Yeah, it tends to be the Hogak end boss.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an interesting side effect of combining the leagues, that the pairing algorithm is sort of working again. If I understand it correctly, it tries to pair you against someone with a similar record as you or off by one. And that kind of broke down as a league shrunk to 500 people or so, but now that it's back up to like 1,300 people, I think you are more often paired against someone who's doing as well as you. So I've had like several leagues in a row that just like the last round is Hogak. And
it is nice that you get paired so much faster now. I mean, I felt like it was hard to almost get a game sometimes, but now you can just jump right back in if something goes awry.
Yeah, as long as you don't need Illidamer's Calls in your deck, you can grab the cards you need and go.
Exactly. So, I mean, we've only just started to kind of work our way through our, you know, week-by-week analysis of Modern Horizons, but the Core Set 2020 previews have already started. I think about a fourth of the, or maybe a third of the set has been spoiled. Are there any cards that have caught your guys' eye as far as possible Modern playable? Some of these cards are, of course, reprints, but there are a few kind of interesting new cards that might be of interest.
I mean, first, let's just start with the cards that are not new. Leyland of the Void is being reprinted, which for me is great. I've never been able to play a deck with Leylands because I don't own any. You know, I managed to buy Surgical and it was cheap, but I just don't have any. And now maybe same. I can afford them.
Same. I'm really excited about that.
Yeah.
And it is rare, not mythic rare, so that's going to drop its price precipitously.
Yeah. Dave, you were pointing me toward a few cards here. What were some of the ones that had caught your eye?
The one card I thought was really interesting was Risen Reef. So that is a 1 green and a blue for a 1/1 elemental. It says whenever Risen Reef or another elemental enters the battlefield under your control, look at the top card of your library. If it's a land card, you may put it under the battlefield tapped. If it's not a land card, you can put it into your hand. So when it comes into play, it replaces itself. And by replacing itself, it may ramp you. But it's interesting because there's lots of cheap or free ways to create elementals. One of which I can think of is Young Pyromancer's tokens are elementals. Pyromancer on 2, play this on 3, and if you had a bunch of free Phyrexian mana spells, now you're getting something out of it. You're getting a 1-1, and that 1-1 is either putting a card into your hand or putting a land into play. Or you could play Risen Reef with the older Pyromancer, which puts two elementals into play. And again, so you get the 1-1 creatures, plus you get two new cards. And I think the new 3-mana Chandra is interesting as well, because that makes two elementals for free. So functionally drawing two cards if you have this card in play. Now, all those are sort of playable in a world where we get to like cast spells and like use the combat stuff and stuff like that. So maybe not in this modern, but in a future modern that we can dream about, I think that's kind of an interesting interaction.
Just to be clear, I think Dave is referring to the newer, older Pyromancer, seasoned Pyromancer.
I've been calling him old PZ, but yeah.
Does he have an official nickname? I haven't seen people sort of.
I've heard Spyro, but I don't know if I like that one.
I'm going to be referring to him as old PZ, and that's just how it's going down.
Spyro. Sounds like Spyro is Tzatziki and Pitos or something.
Discard some Greek food, make some elementals. I don't know. Risen Reef is cool because, I mean, the art is just, it's pretty sweet art. They must have told the guy, like, can you draw a reef walking onto shore? And the guy was like, sure thing.
So this text on the card is the Coiling Oracle text, but yes. You don't have to show them the card. If it's not a land, you don't reveal the card?
Right? Yeah, you don't reveal the card in this case. Slightly better than Coiling Oracle.
I mean, that's a nice ability. That's really nice. It's actually really interesting to me with Flamekin Harbinger. Which tutors, it's a one red elemental that tutors for an elemental and puts it on top of your deck. Card that has vexed me for many years. I'm trying to figure out like how to use that to get a Vengevine directly into play.
Right.
There's just like too many steps involved because it puts it on top of the deck. You have to somehow mill it or whatever. There's just like a lot of zones it has to go through. But like if you have the Risen Reef, then you stack the triggers correctly, you play the Flaming Harbinger, you'll end up with that elemental in your hand. Not that that helps for Vengevine, but you know, it's a thing that you can do now. You can get elementals into your hand directly.
And the Harbinger, if you're making a deck that is trying to abuse Risen Reef, helps you find Risen Reef. I mean, you can play, you know, 6 to 8 Risen Reefs functionally.
And, you know, there's an elemental tribal theme apparently in this set. So, yeah, maybe some of these other elemental cards are worth a look. There's the little Chandra, the 3-mana Chandra, that has a loyalty ability for 0 that produces 2 elementals. So.
Yeah, there's Vok Verzel Elementar, which I actually don't know what it does yet, but I'm sure there's a translation somewhere.
Yeah, that is a good intro pack card, so we'll just skip that one. So one card that I'm excited about it, but also kind of dreading it, is the card Scheming Symmetry. So this is a sorcery for 1 black. It's like a Vampiric Tutor, but for 2 players. So the Vampiric Twofer, I think, is the nickname I saw online for it. So you and a friend, or your opponent in this case, each search a library for any card, shuffle their deck, and put that card on top. Basically, you heard me talk at length about Bolas the Citadel and why it works or doesn't work. If Bolas the Citadel like won the Invitational and got to design a Magic card and sneak it into a set, I think it would be a card something like this. Like it needed a cheap tutor. It needed a Vampiric Tutor type effect that didn't lose life. And that's what this does. So you can chain these off. Whatever card you need to keep going, you will find it, whether that's your kill card, like the Aetherflux Reservoir, or just, you know, whatever it is. And then you cast it immediately because you cast the top card of your deck. And on top of that, because it has this massive drawback, other decks are not going to want it, so it'll be cheap. Because you'll have to spend too much on this card. You'll have more money to burn on league entries with your Citadel deck. But seriously, though, I think I was thinking that the Lantern Mill Rocks were kind of the way to go with Citadel, and that is another way that you can break the symmetry of the Scheming Symmetry, that you tutor for the card you want with the symmetry, you mill it off their deck, the one that they tutor for. And we already want the Mill Rocks in our deck to allow the engine to keep going. So unfortunately, or fortunately, I will have to revisit this deck as soon as this set comes out.
What card would you, if you have a Citadel in play, for example, first off, one way you break the Citadel is by winning the symmetry is by winning the game that turn. But like, what would you be tutoring for? Well, is there any specific card you have in mind?
Yeah, so Aetherflux Reservoir being the kill is probably the easiest one to get.
Okay.
The earlier you have that, the higher odds are of actually completing the combo turn. I think almost every build that we were trying and watching other people try, like, was playing a small number of Reservoir, one or two, and then hoping to just like hit a tutor for it in time before they ran out of ways to change the top card of their deck. So that would probably be like the first thing. But you know, if you have the Reservoir in play, or if you're just like trying to, you know, build up your spell count, you can just get all four Scheming Symmetries in a row and then play the Reservoir, so that it already starts off pretty high.
And if you are playing the Milrock, Damon, you do break the symmetry by just milling away whatever they get.
Oh yeah, no, that part's clear. I'm just saying the other way to break the symmetry is to kill them. That's the classic card advantage way in Magic.
You schemer. You're a schemer, Damon. Damon, you said there was a card that had you interested here as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, basically, Goblin Ringleader in Legacy is a cornerstone of the Goblins deck. Usually, what I found playing as that deck is very scary if you're playing a bear-ish deck. It tends to beat up on all the kind of mid-range Legacy decks. It tends to be weak to combo, but Goblin Ringleader is, if you think Factor Fiction is a great card draw spell for 4 mana, wait till you play Goblin Ringleader and find 4 goblins, including another Goblin Ringleader. Modern does not have Goblin Lackey, which is a critical card for this, but usually Goblin Lackey gets killed on site anyway, and then Goblins just goes into the grinding game with this card, featuring cards that let you cheat a little bit on it with Goblin Warchief or Aether Vial, and it really just lets Goblins grind and grind and grind, and it's one of the scariest cards they can play against you. And so I would be curious to see how it does in Modern. Goblins has already gotten some new toys from Modern Horizons, so this might really push that deck into a pretty good spot.
So, Damon, in Legacy, are people paying 4 mana for the Ringleader, or are they cheating on mana somehow?
Basically, yeah. The Lackey is the ideal way. If your opponent goes Lackey and you have no answer and they go turn 2 Ringleader, I think one game I just like scooped. I was like, I'm not going to win. This game's over. And I didn't feel bad about that one. But then, yeah, Aether Vial is a great way to do it. Warchief is a great way to do it. But paying 4 mana is also just not the worst if it gets you that much advantage.
Goblins has been making a little bit of a comeback. It's been in the last few 5-0 deck dumps, especially with this card, Munitions Expert from Modern Horizons. So, yeah, the Ringleader is definitely going to have a welcome home for it. But I'm a little concerned about the mana cost being maybe not as good at full price. Yeah, definitely want to keep an eye on, I think.
Yeah, in a meta with Hogak and Devoted Druid being like the number one decks, Goblins might not be in a good spot, but... Like, for example, Cavern of Souls into Ringleader just gives blue-white fits. They just can't handle that much card advantage. That's uncounterable.
David, any other cards have caught your eye here?
I think if you wanted to explore Soul Sisters, maybe Angel of Vitality is worth a slot or two in that list. I think everything in that... I haven't played a lot of Soul Sisters, honestly, in Modern. I don't know how competitive it is in the current meta game, but... Angel of Vitality is a card that seems very reasonable if you have lots of small incremental life gain, which that deck does. And it is out of bolt range immediately if you start at 25 life. And it's a flyer, so it blocks Phoenix. So there are some things about it that are intriguing. I don't know how many you can squeeze into that list, but that's a possibility.
Yeah, it looks to me like a kind of slightly worse version of Sarah Ascendant in a focused list. But time will tell, and maybe you really do want Sarah Ascendant's number 5 through 6 that aren't just coming via Rangers of Eos.
Yeah, and I guess the question becomes, is 25 life versus 30 life actually like a meaningful difference? If it is, then maybe this card is good. If it's not, then yeah, like I think you might be right, Damon.
I found that I'm generally pretty happy with 4/4 flyers. Those are just like good stats to have. Whether that's a dragon or whatever it is, it's usually a dragon. But in this case, it could be an angel. It's a sturdy stats.
Well, we will keep an eye on more spoilers as they come out. I think that's kind of it for the sort of the state of play of Magic at the time. Now, I think we're going to move into discussing what card we were excited to brew about last week, which was Ranger Captain of Eos.
Yeah, so to start, I took a couple decks through some leagues. I took Martyr Proc through a league, and then the white-green Celestial Kirin plus Ugin's Conjurant deck through a league. And I have to say that both decks went 2 and 3. They felt a little underpowered. My takeaway is that Ranger Captain is definitely a fine card in Modern. There's definitely no shame in playing it or trying it. But in this current meta, it maybe isn't like a crazy card that's like super excited and maybe want to keep coming back for more. We didn't actually play against too many of the kind of dominant meta decks. one thing about the pairing algorithm working is that as soon as you lose your first two matches, you wind up in the O2 bracket, which is somehow home of the O2 bracket affinity decks, which usually wind up with your opponents not playing optimally. So the 2 and 3s maybe have an asterisk in that sense. Where to start with the decks?
Tell us about the Murder Proc one first, because I think that's like a kind of distinct strategy from the green-white ones.
Yeah, so Martyr Proc, maybe we didn't play against the right decks for it. Martyr Proc is fundamentally one of those meta decks where it's great in some metas and bad in others. Our first round was against a Bug Snow Wreck, a Snow plus Wilderness Reclamation deck, which was like this really grindy bug control deck, and it just outground us once they get going with Nexus of Fate plus Wilderness Reclamation. And this deck just, it does not have the speed or the correct control cards to handle that. The next match was against four color Kiki creature stuff or something. And in game 3, it was kind of surreal. They had Giver of Runes into Gaddock Teague into Collector Oof. And the deck's control cards are Wrath of God, Path to Exile, and Walking Ballista. And so those three cards together completely locked this deck out from being able to stop the combo. Pretty hilarious how effective that was. And also just sort of how strange it was that they even sided in Collector Oof. But the deck does play some artifacts. And then the two wins were against Hardened Scales and Classic Affinity. Again, I'm not completely sure if those were legitimate wins, because I think our opponents may have missed lethal or at least been able to push us a little bit further in some of those games. The deck did feel pretty good against, like, for example, Vault Scourge. It lines up pretty poorly against Squadron Hawk. And so in that sense, Scales does seem like... Sorry, Affinity, I think, might have a lot of trouble against Martyr Proc. And then Scales, you have some good cards against them, for example... There's a secret card that shows up in Martyr Proc sideboards, Hex Parasite, which is a 1 CMC artifact that's like a 1-1, and you can pay a Phyrexian mana plus X to remove X counters from any permanent. And so I was always like, oh, this is a good card against Planeswalkers, because you search it up with your Ranger of Eos, and then you can start, you know, killing their Jaces or what have you. It turns out against Scales, it also kills any number of important creatures, like Hangerback Walkers and Arcbound Ravagers, and takes counters off of their whatever that land is with Graft. You know, anywhere, any counters. In one game, they killed it, and I used Mistfield Plains to put it back into my library, and then played a Ranger Captain of Eos to find it again, and then that was just sweet value. And then the last match against Ponza got crushed.
So I saw, I think, your first two rounds that you were playing with that Daemon, and my sort of takeaway was that when the Murder Proc deck does not have inevitability in the matchup, it's like a horrible deck. Like, it's designed to be a control deck, and when it has to be put in a position of trying to pressure the opponent before they do something that the Murder Proc is not equipped to interact with, like, it's a wretched deck. And having the Ranger Captain on 3 as like a trained Armadon did not really change that math. At least that was my impression of it. It's still a bad deck when you're trying to like get them dead before they just wrest control away from you or infinite combo you.
Yeah, I agree with that assessment.
So the green-white list then that you were referring to was somewhat, like, in theory more proactive in the sense that it could execute this Armageddon combo potentially on the third turn, right? If you lead with a mana dork, you can play the Kieran on turn 3 and then immediately follow that up with Armageddon. Did you find that you were able to have any better success getting that combo online?
Yeah, across the whole league, I wound up using the Armageddon line exactly once. It was pretty cool when I did it. I did it at instant speed during their upkeep with a Vivian. I forget why. Oh, because they had a Huntmaster of the Fells I didn't want to flip. But yeah, the deck was just, as Dan was saying, these white-green decks that try to you know, grind value with Knight of the Reliquary and other such cards. Somehow they tend to not do that well in my experience. They tend to just play some dudes and then their opponent steamrolls you somehow. And the green-white cards just aren't quite fast enough to have their own powerful lines. And they're not defensive enough to survive the opponent's powerful lines. And the problem is that once you fall behind on board, Armageddon is not a great spell to be casting. I also had a particular problem that if you play 4 Ugin's Conjurant and 4 Celestial Kieran in your deck, it turns out you will always draw all 4 Conjurants every game and may or may not draw the Kieran itself. And Ugin's Conjurant is just not actually a very good card in my esteem. I think you guys said it was, and in my experience, it isn't. If it was just an endless one, it would actually be pretty good because you just play, you know, 5-mana 5-5 is not bad. But the damage removal clause really hurts that card. It just is a piece of paper. It blows away in a breeze.
Yeah, that was my bad. Sorry. He's a draft all-star where card advantage matters. And maybe in Modern you need more out of your 5/5s or whatever. I may have led us astray there and saying we can play a bunch of Ugin's Conjurants. So you ended up with like 8 Conjurants in the list because you had the Ranger Captains to find them and a smaller number of Kirins, right? You just had 4 Kirins and 3 Vivians to dig for them. So I think it makes sense that you were finding the Conjurant a lot more often than you were finding the Kirin.
Yeah. So maybe just trimming Conjurant would go a long way and just play like maybe either 2 of them or 1 of them. I think the turn 3 Armageddon is kind of crazy. Generally, you want to like let your opponent play out more lands to really get them, in which case that gives you plenty of time to find your Ranger Captain or Conjurant directly. Possibly adding some Elodomri's Call, I think that was your idea, Dan.
Well, that's an idea that I had, and I guess a lot of other people out there are snapping these up for their own devious purposes. So, David, yeah. I think you played a version similar to Damon's that was also using the Vivian as the digging engine. Did you have any better results?
No, I think I also finished 2-3. Yeah, I mean, I actually thought that the combo was actually very powerful. I used the Conjurant on 1 and 2 multiple times to get like a 2 or 3 for 1, like just as a removal spell or kind of build your own engineered explosives. But the rest of the deck around it felt very poor. I don't think I will be wanting to build a deck with Knight of the Reliquary anytime soon. That card is just not good.
I will say that the Vivian Champion of the Wilds plus Knight interaction that we talked about briefly was actually pretty good, where you attack with the Knight and then use the Knight, which actually means that your Vivian uptick weirdly functions as if it just gives you a second Knight of the Reliquary. Like your +1 is like get a free Knight of the Reliquary for a turn if you already have one in play.
Let's see them beat 2 Knight of the Reliquaries.
Might not be good enough.
Might have just been my draws or maybe the decks I played against. But like against humans, you can't keep it alive and it's a bad card against Thalia. They just blink your Knight of the Reliquary. I mean, Knight of the Reliquary just like isn't that good against the fair decks and it isn't that good against the unfair decks. So it's just not that good in Modern, I mean.
Yeah, I think that I was surprised how often there would be the option to go for an early Armageddon. But you look at the board state and it's like we're already behind on board, even though we've curved Mana Dork into 3-drop. Like, we're just behind. And if we are cast an Armageddon, we're going to lose the game.
Well, that situation never happened to me. I wanted the combo in every game I had. So if you had a better shell to put it in, like if you had Mana Rocks to try to play it on 3 and not have to play the Ranger Captain, I don't know. I'm not sure that there is a deck, but...
So I tried some variants in that space. I was kind of troubled by the reports I heard from Damon and Dave about either not getting the combo when they wanted it or just not being able to execute for much value. So I felt like maybe I should just take some more extreme measures to like really, really make sure I have Armageddon online. So I tried the same green-white shell, but this time with Elodamri's Call, and they were basically taking the Vivian spots so that now I had, you know, more copies of the Kirin that would like guarantee the Kirin. And the rest of the deck was more or less the same. And I had like somewhat better league results. I think I went 4-1, but I kind of had the same overall feeling about the deck as you guys were describing. I didn't love it, and I was amazed at just how irrelevant most of the mid-range green-white package felt in most of the matches. Like I kind of felt like there's okay, these green-white decks, they have like 3 components, and like a big chunk of it is your medium stuff. That's your mana dorks, your 3-drops, and like some paths, maybe some Thalias or whatever. And like that stuff almost never wins. And then you have your powerful thing, which in this case was supposed to be the Celestial Kirin Ugin's Conjurant combo. And then you have like a tutor package. And what ends up happening is that like, you know, the powerful thing is what you need to actually win most matches. And then the tutor package is what you need because in the post-cyborg games, they can get cyborg creatures that actually help you a lot. But the medium stuff almost never is a thing that makes a difference. And I think that's kind of like a lesson that these devoted druid decks have taken as well. Like the tutors are good and the combo is good. That's the powerful thing. Just forget the other stuff. Like stop trying to get there with Tireless Trackers and Knight of the Reliquaries.
Yeah, like Modern is not a place to be playing Magic right now. Like just throw your 7 cards on the table, win on turn 3. I think that's right.
Yeah. One thought experiment I have is like, supposedly you could play a white green deck and on turn 1 you get a free 3/3 creature for no cards and you play against Hogak. Like, how much does that matter?
Can it sacrifice itself to exile a bridge from below, or no?
No. It's just a 3/3. Because, like, for example, Celestial Kirin is, like, a 4 mana for a 3/3 flyer, and it literally felt like it may as well just have been, the fact that it was a creature never came up. It was just two white whites to enable Armageddon. Like a 3/3 flyer was just irrelevant in most board states.
I believe that the old like Duels of the Planeswalkers intro game used to have like a little ladder mode, like a challenge you could do as you're learning, where you play against an AI opponent that just like produces a grizzly bear every turn or something. It doesn't cast anything else. It just makes a bear every turn. Or like then the next level up is it makes like a trained Armadon, like an elephant every turn or something like that. And you have to train yourself to be able to beat that with your deck. And I think modern players have reached that level of advanced play where they can defeat the 3/3 every turn that a green white deck is likely to produce.
Yeah. Maybe in a meta with more planeswalkers where like the 3/3 bodies would be useful, but somehow less planeswalkers because then they wrath your board. I don't know. The Ranger kept it a similar issue where like you get a 3/3 in play and the 3/3 was just largely irrelevant. It didn't attack or block or do anything that well.
I had some games where the body size was good enough. Like I wasn't discouraged by that. And he has been, like as we said, he's been showing up in a few different decks. Like, he's a good card. He's a clean 2-for-1. But, well, he's a 1.5-for-1, depending on how you count the contract. I had very little success using him to tutor for other miscellaneous 1-drops. Like I tried like a random Hex Drinker in my build. And that was a great, you know, Savannah Lions chump blocker, but that's about all I got out of the card. I was never able to tutor for a Giver of Ruins in a favorable situation. So the lack of like a good one drop that just like felt like I'm really doing it now. Like I've drawn my Ranger Captain playing him, and now I've got this sweet like one drop follow up next turn or this turn that just didn't come up. Like I didn't have a one drop that I was really happy with, which I think maybe that's why the Esper Shadow lists are getting better use out of the card.
Right, they get to get a one card that could functionally win the game by itself if unanswered.
Yeah, so I did try one other build that I was again trying to figure out like how to get Armageddon more reliably and faster. So I just added more Armageddons. And it turns out that, well, you can do it with Restore Balance, which I think people have explored, but you can also do it with the card Boom Bust. That is a split card. The front half is a 2-mana Stone Rain that also destroys one of your own lands, but the second half is a 6-mana Armageddon. So I just threw 4 of those into the deck and ended up with some kind of Boros Armageddon control deck. So I was still playing the Kirin and the Conjurant and the Ranger Captain to sort of assemble that. But on top of all that, I had these Boom Busts and like a mana base that was kind of cribbed from Murder Proc in the sense that it was using Flagstones of Trocare in multiples, like a full 4 set of those and Ghost Quarters to convert them into better lands. And I was also even playing 2 of the Indestructible Land from Amonkhet, the Cascading Cataracts. And that deck was like, okay, I took it through 1 league. Unfortunately, I didn't learn that much about the deck because I got paired against mid-range like almost every single round. I think I got paired against 2 Jund decks, 1 Mardu deck, and 1 like Teemer mid-range. And I learned that I didn't have enough tools against mid-range. I still managed to go 3-2 with the deck, so maybe it's not that bad. And I did have some nice sequences with Armageddon, with both the Boom Bust and the Kirin combo that they were worth the price of admission. Like I had a game where I used the Kirin plus the Conjurant to destroy the Mardu players' lands and Lingering Souls tokens and Seasoned Pyromancer tokens and just like ended his whole career. It was great, but the rest of the deck just was not quite there.
I was never playing Modern again.
Yeah, he's done. He's like wiped away everything he had. So that felt good, but the rest of the deck, it was just kind of guesswork. I felt like I needed a cheap proactive card that would threaten to snowball, like a 3-mana Planeswalker or something that could generate value every turn. I didn't quite have that, so I maybe just had too many mana sources in my build, and I'm not quite sure if there was a card that would do what I wanted it to. Actually, the Teemer guy that I referenced, he was playing Renin 6, which was hilariously good against my plan, and it made me think, like, I wish I had a Renin 6. Like maybe that's what I should be doing with this list. Like I had like 1 Crucible, but what if I had more? What if I had more Renin 6 that could actually pick off annoying creatures? And that would require like some rethinking of the mana base. But yeah, I wasn't totally sure what to make of that. Like I ended up having to side out the Boom Busts in some of the grindier matchups because of this problem we were talking about, where like the Armageddon is castable, but it will not win the game based on the board state. And that was certainly true for this red-white deck. I don't know. Like, I think if you think back to when has Armageddon historically been good, it's in white weenie decks. And I was far away from that in my build. So.
Yeah, and one card that makes Armageddon good is also Aether Vial, which we haven't really been trying in any of these lists.
I mean, that kind of suggests maybe like a blue-white spirits with Aether Vial that just happens to top out on Kieran and Conjurant.
One of the teams in the Modern Super League on Twitch right now is playing a green-white blue deck that features the Kieran Conjurant combo, and it also has some blue-white cards such as Spell Queller, which maybe that card is good at kind of making sure you don't fall behind too much on the first few turns. On the other hand, I think that they played their deck and got crushed by Hogak. It wasn't close.
Did they get to Wrath, the cast Armageddon, destroy the zombie token,
died.
And also kill the bridge from below? No, they died. Okay.
Yeah, I wonder if this list could use a Blood Moon somehow to, like, Blood Moon can help slow decks down, and then if they get some basics online, then you Armageddon. And frequently, once you have a Blood Moon resolved, it's much harder to get online, because if they draw a fetch land, they can't fetch a basic preemptively once the Blood Moon's there. But that's like devoting a lot of slots into this package, which maybe is just not workable.
Maybe Blood Moons, yeah, that's a good thought. I was thinking about the card Geomancer's Gambit, kind of a one that slipped through the cracks in the Modern Horizon spoiler season, but it's a Field of Ruin sorcery for 3 that cantrips, and you can target your own lands. So if you have like a Flagstone of Trocare or like a indestructible land, you can just target your own land to ramp yourself and cantrip, or you can just target their lands if that's advantageous to you. It would have been good in this build, but maybe in a similar way that Blood Moon could have been good at disrupting them. I'm not sure like what that looks like yet, but I think that's one I kind of want to keep an eye on, put in my back pocket as a card to maybe explore further.
Yeah, I mean, if Rampant Growth cantripped and cost 3 mana, would you be playing it in Modern? Like, something tells me no.
Would you be playing it, or would I be playing it?
It's a 3 mana clean 2-for-1, as Dan likes to say, and that goes a long way.
Exactly.
Kadama's Reach, buddy. It's like a cantrip, but you always draw a land. Not Modern playable.
Kadama's Reach is a good card that is only held back by the fact that you need basic lands. It's a good card. Sam Black proposed Kodama's Reach in one of his lists not even 2 weeks ago. It was a Rainbow Snow Niv-Mizzet list with Arkham's Astrolabe that I think is worth exploring as well. So it's not crazy. In any case, I digress. So yes, what are our thoughts on Ranger Captain, at least what we've learned so far from these builds?
I think you need to get a lot out of your one drop that you get. You know, it is a 2-for-1, but if your one drop is something that is basically just a mana creature or something that's only conditionally worth a card, then it's not a clean 2-for-1, and a 3-mana 3-3 is not well-positioned in Modern right now, even with all that extra text. And I think the shells you want to put it in typically are green-white-ish shells, because it lets you play it on 2, and it gives you a bunch of extra targets with the mana guys, and it is not green-white's time with how Modern is currently in a environment that is not very conducive to showcase its strengths.
Yeah, I felt like, compared to, for example, flashing back into Tarkus Command with the Dreadhorde Arcanist, the only lines involving Ranger Captain that felt as fun or as powerful were fetching Hex Parasite versus Hardened Scales. So if Hex Parasite is a go-to card for your local meta, then Ranger Captain seems amazing. But barring that, it wasn't super exciting to me. I would have liked to try the Esper Shadow deck. That is a deck that we do think, I mean, that deck did really well in a challenge. Did it win the challenge? I don't even remember. But
I'm not sure.
The core concept of using Ranger Captain to fetch a Death Shadow does seem pretty strong.
Yeah, I was happy with Walking Ballista as a sometimes fetch. Wasn't that happy with Giver of Ruins as a tutor target, although it did look good on my opponent's side of the board when they just naturally played it on turn 1. So I don't know what to make of that. But yeah, the Conjurant didn't quite deliver in the way that I hoped he would as a standalone card. I mean, I think I got better use out of him than I think I'm hearing you guys did, but I'm willing to believe that it was just bad luck.
I used Conjurant multiple times to like borderline wrath my opponent's board. So it's just the rest of the deck that I thought was weak.
So, I mean, maybe it's the green is the problem. Like, you know, the instinct to build a green-white deck, that's kind of on us. Nothing about this card says you had to play it with green. Even the Kieran combo is mono-white. So you can build it in a mono-white deck, bad red-white deck like I've done, or blue-white, or it doesn't have to be green. And maybe, you know, accelerating out a 3-3 on turn 2 is, is useless, as we've learned.
But playing a 3-man, a 3-3 on 3 seems a lot less attractive, if I'm being honest.
Well, we're violating it in. I mean, the humanist players seemed to love copying your Ranger Captain of Eos. So they're
yes.
thrilled.
Exactly, that is true.
To be a humans player, you get to enjoy all the fun innovations in modern from the Phantasmal Image side of the table.
Yeah.
Ooh, nice Bedlam Reveler. I'll take one of those.
Yeah, having with a thing in the ice once that I had slipped, and it was very disappointing. It's like, how come you get a 7-8? This doesn't seem fair.
But yeah, so I think, you know, there may be a time, there may be a build we haven't explored yet where it's useful. I think, yeah, it's sort of added to the kind of stock, the shadow list, it already is seeing some play. And yeah, maybe there is a future modern that's a little less combo focused and is more focused on these big mana decks where Armageddon is much more powerful. Yeah, so I guess that kind of sums up, I think, the experiments with the Ranger Captain.
Yeah, so I think that'll conclude our flashback to the Ranger Captain of Eos. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll have some new brews for this week.
All right, welcome back. So continuing our exploration of sort of the way you can build new lists or variants of existing lists with Modern Horizons cards, two of the cards that really stuck out to me were Fairy Seer, which is a 1 blue mana, 1/1 fairy wizard. And when it comes into play, you can scry 2. They have printed a variety of sort of value 1 mana, blue 1 mana flyer fairies with various abilities. I think this one is by far the best. The 1/1 is significantly worse than drawing a card from Seer and Visions, but you do get to play to the board, which allows you to A, make Spellstar Sprite on turn 2 very good, or B, activate a ninja, which they also printed more of. In addition to that, they printed another really powerful 2-drop that has flash, which is Ice Van Kotal. So that is a blue and a green for a 1/1 flying snake. When it comes into play, draw a card. And then if you control 3 other snow permanents, so it does not count itself, it has Death Touch. So it's sort of a fixed reprint of Baleful Strix. That card is probably too powerful for modern, we would say, I think. This one at least causes you to make some deck building decisions if you want to play enough basics or other Kotals or other snow permanents to try to turn on the card. So I guess this week I'm proposing a bunch of tempo lists which use some of these cards or the other in a way to try to sort of play a flash speed, leave up a bunch of counter magic because there are a bunch of unfair decks out there. So you can't really tap out to play your, you know, dorky Knight of the Reliquary. And I do think especially that Ice Van Kotal solves a problem that these decks have, which is, okay, the tempo deck is fine against linear combo decks, but it sucks against fair decks because they just play their Tarmogoyf and just stomp you. But if you can play Kotal with Death Touch, it compensates a lot for the fact that you don't have removal. It's just a 2-mana draw a card, kill Tarmogoyf while your ninja or sprites or whatever are beating down.
I find it so telling, Dave, that of all the cards in Modern Horizons, you know, there's this 1/1 fairy for 1 blue, and you're like, this is it. This is the new face of modern tempo right here. It's time.
It definitely scratches an itch that I have. it certainly fits the definition of a pet card in, I think, literally every way.
I mean, Fairy Miscreant is a pauper powerhouse, as far as I know.
Yeah, I think that this is much better than Fairy Miscreant. And the Scry 2 is quite useful in terms of setting up your turn 2. So it makes it way more likely that you can cast Bitter Blossom on turn 2 if that's a thing that you like to do. Spellstar Sprite on turn 2 if that's a thing you like to do. Or attack the ninja on turn 2 if that's what you want to do. Or cast Ice Van Kotal or Tarmogoyf. Those are all turn 2s that you can follow up with. Or you could put multiple of them in the same deck if that's something that you are interested in. I kind of have a bunch of different variants. I think the most powerful in terms of like raw cards would be the Sultai Fairy list. I mean, one of the things that it gets to use is the new ninja card, Ingenious Infiltrator. So that's a 2, a blue, and a black for a 2/3 ninja. Is it a Naga? I don't know what the other type is.
Oh, he's a Vedulkin.
Oh, okay. Vedulkin.
Crafty. Using the one called Naga Naga something.
Yeah. There is a Naga ninja, but this one is not. So it's functionally a ninja of the depowers with a couple of differences. One, to the ninjutsu cost is blue-black instead of 1 and a blue, so you have to play a black. 2, it has 3 toughness instead of 2. That isn't very relevant in modern. And 3, it reads whenever a ninja deals combat damage, you may draw a card. So if you have two Ingenious Infiltrators in play and they both hit the opponent, you draw four cards that each see each other. It also triggers off of Mutavaults or other ninjas. I think in this list, I'm proposing one Fallen Shinobi, which I think is actually probably a modern power level card. That's a little more speculative. I think it would be fair to say that Dex and Modern are so synergistic that maybe the two cards you hit aren't necessarily going to be, even though you get to play them for free, are probably maybe not worth it.
So remind us, Fallen Shinobi, its ninjutsu is 4 mana, and then
yeah, 2 of blue and black. You reveal the top 2 cards from their library and may play them for free.
You may play them for free. Oh, that's nice text.
So you may play a land without paying their mana cost. Obviously, an X spell is always 0. And it is a 4/5.
5/4.
So it's big. I mean, I like that. But I hear what you're saying, where I think for the same reason that like a Thief of Sanity is not really a card you want to try in Modern. It's like the cards off of their deck probably don't help you that much.
Yeah, I mean, this does play them for free, though. I don't know if that's a fair comparison.
True.
Yeah. Thief of Sanity made waves in Legacy, but that's a format with most decks playing Brainstorms. You can steal at worst.
Right.
Yeah, if you hit a Hogak, you're going to be laughing with your 8/8. If you hit a bridge from below, you will not be laughing.
You can cast this.
Oh, yeah.
Sweet power of a textless enchantment.
So talk us through this Sultai build then.
All right, so you start with 16 one drops. You have Fairy Seer, the broken card from Modern Horizons. 4 Opt, and then you use black as your interaction. So 4 Inquisition, 4 Fatal Push. And then on 2, I have 4 Spellstutter Sprite, 4 Ice Van Kotal. Then 3 Snapcaster Mage and 1 Mana Leak. And it was unclear to me what the sort of best counter package would be, so I just included a lot of 1 and 2 ofs. I have 2 Wizard's Retorts, which hopefully will cost 2 mana in this deck because you have 12 Wizards. And then I have a Force of Negation, which I think I've got 1 snuck into all of these lists. When you get to start attacking with ninjas, you end up with a lot of extra cards in your hand. And Force of Negation is a way of sort of turning those extra cards in hand into effect on the board, which is pretty important in the sort of linear combo metagame that we're describing. And then at the top of the curve, I have 2 Cryptic Command, sort of the one speculative Fallen Shinobi. And then Ingenious Infiltrator, is a 4-drop, but hopefully you can cast it or ninjutsu it into play relatively early into the game.
I hope you never have to hard cast Ingenious Infiltrator.
Yeah, I mean, that's
tough. If I have to do that, I would just concede instead. I would say, you got me.
Yeah.
I cannot execute my game plan.
The only green card I have main deck is the Ice Van Kotal. So you can definitely get away with playing like 1 basic forest, 1 basic swamp, a bunch of plains, or a bunch of islands. Those are all snow lands, and then you've got a bunch of fetches, some amount of Prismatic Vista. Yeah, so the mana costs aren't too rough. There's no double black card in the whole list, for instance.
It's kind of funny how you're willing to contort your entire mana base, both in terms of colors and snow basics, just to play Baleful Strix. But the card is good enough that it makes sense. It's just, wow.
It also opens up some possibilities in sideboarding. I haven't really, specced out a possible sideboard. But yeah, I mean, I am exactly as Damon says. I'm bending my mana somewhat significantly to be able to play one of the better 2-drops for a fair deck.
So I think that when I'm thinking about ninjas as like a high level, what makes them tick as a competitive strategy, I think one of the biggest questions is like, what are you returning? And like, how much does it cost you to have to return a creature to your hand? And you could say like, I just want to do it as efficiently as possible with like Ornithopter or something that's a 0 mana flyer. Or just like a 1-drop that it's cheap and like maybe I get something off recasting it or not. Like Miscreant is nice if you have 2 Miscreants, but you probably won't. Fairy Seer, you do get that Scry again. But like once you start going up to 2 mana, like the card you're returning is 2 mana, like I kind of want like big effects. So you're saying that the card draw off the Ice Fang is worth it. Like it's worth spending 2 mana to cast Ice Fang in the first place and then return it to your hand and then like recast it again. You'll be drawing a lot of cards, but is that efficient enough?
Yeah, I mean,
my answer to that is that whenever you come into a grindy matchup, having access to any sort of relatively cheap card drawing engine can really, really help. And yeah, drawing a card for 2 mana will do that for you, even if it's only once. If it's obviously you're playing against one of these turn 3 kill decks, then it's not super valuable to do that. But any sort of fair matchup that feels like actually is quite worthwhile to me.
The flash on Kotal is like super important here too. It lets you leave mana up through their entire turn, and if they don't do anything that you need to counter or whatever, it lets you sort of play proactively to the board. And you know, replace a card in your hand. So you don't have to even ninja that this card on turn three. You can, you know, Inquisition them or whatever, and then leave mana open again to cast a counterspell if necessary. So you can wait until you can ninja with two mana up, so you can leave counter magic functionally open for the entire game. It's just a way to proactively keep the cards flowing and add to the board.
Yeah, and to be fair, I mean, hopefully the other cards you're bouncing is not just the Coatl, it's also Spellslayer Sprite and Snapcaster Mage.
Right.
And those are both good hits.
If you're bouncing a Snapcaster Mage, then you're a master of Modern. I guess that's that feels like a unlikely scenario. I mean, I know that those cards are in the deck, so it could come up, but what are we envisioning? We're not under any pressure from them, or how are we getting through on the ground with a Snapcaster? Or an Ingenious Infiltrator, for that matter. Like, you hit once, how are you going to hit again?
EOT, Snap, Fatal Push.
Cryptic Command, tap your squad.
Yeah, I guess it's possible that, like, once we start testing this, I will find that people are not playing creatures and they're just not in the business of blocking these days. So maybe connecting will be trivial.
Yeah, it seems like this deck would maybe not have a great humans matchup, for example, for the reasons you're just mentioning. Although maybe if you have enough cards in your sideboard that hit humans, it could turn that around.
Yeah, and one of the cards I would recommend playing against humans is that new 2 and a black 2/2
Plague Engineer.
Plague Engineer, yes, sir. That card is quite powerful. It's good against humans. It's okay against Hogak decks.
So a question that I have as I look at this list is that you said you had 16 one drops, but only 4 of them are creatures. So the start that I'm envisioning, like if I'm drawing up my draft deck or something, or my kitchen table deck, is I'll have like multiple 1-mana evasive flyers. And if I have the option to play like 8 copies of Ninja of the Deep Hours, like why wouldn't I? But I think I see you didn't go that route. You're only playing the good ones, right? So just the Fairy Seer and just the Ingenious Infiltrator. And you're not sort of going like down the roster of cards that could fill that role to get like extra copies of that effect.
Yeah, I mean, it might be worth it to push it sort of just as an intellectual exercise. Like, you could play 4 Mausoleum Wanderer, 4 of the Blue-White Bird that also sacrificed to make Insider Structure cost 1 more mana. And then you could play like 4 Ingenious Infiltrator, 4 Ninja of the Deep Hours. But I think that deck is just really, really high on synergy and very low on overall power. You know, the cards in this deck, except for maybe Fairy Seer, are like legitimately playable cards. I mean, they all interact, and the ninja itself is the most speculative. So, I mean, this isn't like a effect that's inherently powerful. It's getting to play a 2-mana 2/2 haste that draws a card and might never draw a card for the rest of the game or might just die to removal. You know, you can't build your whole deck around just doing that and thinking that somehow turns into a win, especially when we're talking about, you know, Hogak winning on some ridiculously early turn or Devoted Druid. So, yeah, this list sort of slips that into a shell that is relatively high on interaction with both hand and the board and the stack.
I think that's wise. That makes sense. I believe that Saffron Olive played a list like what you were describing with like a bunch of copies of 1-mana flyers and Ninja of the Deep Hours plus the Infiltrator.
Sure. I mean, I've built similar decks like around the kitchen table, and that is awesome. That's super fun. I'm just not sure that's going to get it done in Modern. That's pretty blindingly fast right now. I could imagine you dying with a full hand many times and just, I don't know, being so happy that you got to draw all these extra cards.
Can I ask one more question in this vein then?
Of course.
So Ninja Bear Delver, this is a deck that like you'll just hear people throw that phrase around as if it was ever a deck. And as far as I'm concerned, it wasn't, but this is like a Travis Wu thing from years back.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with this deck.
I know you love the concept, at least I assume you love it, but he was, again, playing a lot of one drops, if I remember correctly, and conceiving of like the plan is like, I'm going to curve out with creatures. And I don't remember what he had in the way of counter spells or interaction.
I think the plan was to basically get way behind and then try to like loop Snapcaster Cryptics while drawing cards with Ninja of the Deep Hours to like keep refilling your hand. So every game I ever saw him, or I think LSV ran through a league, they would get way behind and then they would just set up these elaborate, you know, sort of like fairies like tempo locks where they would end up Cryptic Command, get in for 2 with the ninja, draw a card, Snapcaster Cryptic Command, and they would just do enough damage to get there. But I think that was a lot different Modern. That was a lot slower. Cryptic Command was a lot more powerful. I mean, we just described multiple lists today that kill you before you get to your 4th land for Cryptic Command, and certainly before you get to Snapcast back Cryptic Command. Mm. And, you know, like, you're playing Delver in that list with very few spells. I'm always a little skeptical of Delver and Ninja List because you need a lot of creatures for your ninjas, but then you need a large amount of spells. I mean, Delver's really struggled to find a home in Modern because of the density needed.
So if I'm hearing you right, you're saying that that list, even though it maybe looked like it had a lot of cheap creatures, it was not really like a weenie list. It was more of a tricksy tempo list.
Yeah, I think it only had, I mean, again, I'm not looking at it, but I think the one drops were 4 Delver, 4 Bear.
But it's still double what we have here, so I'm...
It's double the one drops, so we have a lot more two drops that actually maybe impact the board, in theory, true, right? That's what we're proposing, so...
True. So, Damon, you were going to say something earlier.
Oh, I got lost in the Ninja Bear Delver. This deck is wild.
It was never good. I stand by that. Its highest finish was the time that LSV played it on video once. But to this day, you'll find people be like, Ninja Bear Delver, of course. Similarly with Assault Loam. I don't know. People just believe this is a deck. It has to actually win something once to like.
I think Assault Loam won a GP way back in the day, did it not?
And it did. That was many, many years ago.
All right. Well, I mean, that's... That's
nothing to do with Renin 6 or whatever we're saying now.
Yeah. We played against some John Loam deck, and every time they cast Life from the Loam, I was just kind of happy. All right, they're not doing anything that I care about.
To your point, Dan, I also am sort of proposing like a blue-green Tempo Fairies list that doesn't have Ninja the Deep Hours. Instead, it kind of apes the mono-blue list in Standard right now and plays Curious Obsession as kind of your card value engine. So you can put that on a turn one Fairy Seer, and then you can sort of still play Spell Pierce, Blossoming Defense, Spell Snare.
You cannot put it on a turn one Phantasmal Bear, so absolutely Ninja Bear Delver's out.
Yeah. But then you still get to play, you know, Spell Snare, Sprite, Ice Fang, Kotal. I think those cards are great. I'm proposing a little bit more of like a Fairy Shell. Again, this is just, it's just your classic tempo list. You're not playing cards that are super high value, but you're trying to get ahead and then sort of protect your Fairy Seer in this case, or Spell Snare, Sprite.
We'll just call this a blue-green fairies list without ninjas.
Right.
Curious Obsession has always struck me as being a super powerful magic card that leads to some of the most busted starts for a tempo deck ever. It never really found a home in any form besides Standard, though.
It had some decent league results in like a blue-white spirits deck maybe a year and a half ago, I want to say, where I think the theory there was that like Collected Company was a little bit random for what the blue-white spirits was trying to do, and it prevented you from playing Thalia as a disruptive 2-drop. So someone, I forgot who his name was, but he had a nice write-up about a few different league results that he got him with that deck, with the Obsession. But then again, like his 1-drops were good at protecting the creature with the Obsession. He had Mausoleum Wanderers, Selfless Spirit could protect the card. And that's something that I don't think we have in this blue-green list. We have no natural protection on the creatures except for Scion of Una. You actually have to like hold men up for counter spells.
That's correct.
So should we be considering more of these like protective friends who can carry the Obsession in a pinch?
Yeah, I mean, I think Mausoleum Wanderer is like a really powerful card. I'm always game to try that guy out.
Yeah, what's that? Is Mausoleum Wanderer like a strict upgrade to that one like Judge's Familiar?
Basically.
Yeah, looks like it is. Okay.
Well, I mean, in certain lists, Bird could be a more relevant creature type. Being of two colors is relevant, let's say, in a Niv-Mizzet list, etc., but it's functionally an upgrade, yes.
Exactly, exactly. But at that point, you're diversifying your tribes a lot, and I don't think that you have room for any kind of fairy theme, necessarily. Or even here, it's the lightest of fairy themes. You have Fairy Seer, Spell Stutter, and then a couple Scion of Una, a couple clicks.
Yeah, I mean, like, are fairies the key tribe for Curious Obsession? Like, maybe Curious Obsession is an interesting card, but we don't care about the fairy package quite as much.
Yeah, could be the case. My thought was just, if you want to play a tempo list, Fairy Seer just seems really useful for that. It's a 1-drop that helps you cast Curious Obsession on turn 2 a reasonable amount of the time. But that does not necessarily mean that you need to play any other fairies, or even that you need to play Fairy Seer at all, because it does not interact with spells the way that Mausoleum Wanderer or Judge's Familiar do.
So I'm intrigued by this list for sure. And I actually, when you said that it was based off of the Standard mono blue deck, I kind of went, ooh, because I love that deck. That deck is amazing. And it was just like a breath of fresh air in Standard when it was briefly Ascendant and won the Pro Tour. I think that if I were going to play this list, I would probably want to actually rebuild the curve on the model of the Standard deck, where I mean they've had probably at least 10 one drops to just sort of be adding to the board. You know, whenever you have one, you can add it to the board and, you know, leave up as much mana as you need to. of course, the cards being like Siren, Storm, Tabor, and we'd have that option, or the Judge of Familiar, or the Mausoleum Wanderer. I think that like that you'll just get more out of the obsession if you have more creatures like that.
Yeah, Siren, Storm, Tamer, that's the one I was thinking of. That card sounds great. Maybe. Again, modern level is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think most mono blue lists are playing 8 one drops. So when you say a lot more, you mean you want one more playset of one drops in there.
Well, they're playing Siren, Storm, Tamer, and Terramander, and then some number of Miscloaked Herald, depending on what week of the metagame it was.
Okay.
So between one and three Miscloaked Heralds.
Yeah, I mean, certainly going from 4 to 8 is a huge difference in terms of turn one probabilities.
Because, like, your nut draw is one drop into Obsession plus Spell Pierce or whatever.
And right.
You want to just, like, make sure that the Obsession is a limiting factor, not the one drop. But, I mean, I think the tools are starting to, like, coalesce. Like, the possibility of Force of Negation to, like, be that sort of Day's Force of Will free protection space. I think Ice Fang is a great addition to... Well, I won't call it this deck because it doesn't exist yet, but I think that is a great card to sort of make me want to try this deck. So, I think V-Click could do nicely as well, kind of replacing the Tempest Djinn as something that actually screws with their plan a little bit. Would you be open to a rebuild like that? Or?
Yeah, no, I think so. I mean, the Mistbind Click and some of these other cards are pretty speculative. So, I mean, it's easy to cut those, cut a couple of Vapor Snags, easily put in another 4-1 drops, and you could even slot in a few more if you wanted.
Yeah. Yeah. The key question to me on this list is, are you almost certainly going to win if you have the turn one creature into turn two Curious Obsession? Because that's really where you want to be with this list, is that with like the standard list, my understanding is that if you don't have a Curious Obsession, the list is just like not even close to as powerful. And so if you're going to play a higher variance deck in terms of your opening starts, you need to make sure that the upside is really worth it. The second question I have is, if you're going to kind of go all in on one drops and then spells that pump them and spells that protect them, there's already a deck that does that called Infect. And are we doing this sort of similar things as that deck, but to less powerful effect?
But to less powerful Infect?
Oh, sorry. The puns.
Well, so Infect does not play interaction, really, right? They're all entirely devoting all their slots to their own stuff, right? Their pump spells. Do they play Spell Pierce? Maybe sometimes.
They certainly have several in their sideboard.
Yeah, I would also consider Vines of Vastwood to be interactive. It functions similar to Spell Pierce in a sense. It doesn't stop your opponent from comboing, but it stops them from killing your dude.
And they play a Blossoming Defense, which we have in this list as well.
But certainly, yeah, the Curious Obsession list is meant to be more interactive and grindy. The whole point is if you're going up a card every turn, you want to use that to trade one for one and amass an advantage.
I think that's an important question, like what makes this worth doing instead of just playing scale-ups and such. But for me, I think the answer would have to be that, like, yeah, I'm interested in actually stopping the opponent from resolving certain spells. Whereas Infect is just like, you know, the only things that matter are my creatures and keeping them alive. And
I'm looking at multiple Infect lists that are playing Ask, Spell Pierce, Main, and like another two in the side, and maybe a Dispel. And again, those are functioning defensive spells that can also somewhat interact with, you know, other linear decks, depending on what your linear plan is. Spell Pierce does not interact well. It interacts reasonably well with like the creature tutors, but not the creatures themselves. If you were to draw them, if you're, let's say you're playing Devoted Druid.
So I think then going down that kind of rabbit hole, then I'm kind of wondering like what are the counter spells like that are available to this style of deck? Because thinking back to the standard comparison, like that standard deck played a lot of counter spells and it had the option to side into even more counter spells. Whereas in modern, like counter spells don't have as much pedigree, but like there's a lot of options now. You talked about Wizard Retort as something you could do. There's Mana Leak as well. That was on the list as well. Spell Pierce, Spell Snare, Force of Negation. Like, how many do we want to play and like what do we expect?
Is you get to play Spell Slutter Sprite.
Oh, yeah, of course. Spell Slutter Sprite.
As opposed to they had to play Siren Storm Tamer, which had to die to actually protect something and leave mana up.
So I think a Spell Slutter makes a big difference. Yeah, maybe this is actually, this could be kind of good. I'm kind of interested in this. Damon, I think you're a little more of a skeptic.
I'm skeptical at the very least of cards like Scion of Una and Mistbind Click. Those cards just don't seem like they have a home in modern these days. I do think that it comes down to those two questions for me. Is this a better thing to be doing that is kind of in this line versus Infect? And then are the Curious Obsession starts super like, you know, 80% chance to win or whatever? And if the answer is yes to both of those, then this deck actually seems, you know, like it plays powerful cards. Blue-Green Tempo seems like a fun deck to play. I think one issue with blue-green, though, is that perhaps your sideboard cards tend not to be the most diversified.
Absolutely. And sideboards are a big part of modern, of course.
With that Stony Silence creature helps a lot.
That's true.
And we're learning that the best graveyard interaction is stuff that you don't have to spend mana on, so any color can have that.
Yeah.
But yeah, creature removal is going to be, you're going to be hard pressed to actually kill a creature outside of getting your Ice Fangs, the Frosty Death Touch, or whatever they need. So should we talk about this next build here?
So the other two lists I have are sort of just variations on a theme. One is basically like a blue-black list without the green for the Kotal, but it's still the sort of same base cards. Not sure if that's, you know, we don't need to go too deep into that. It's similar questions and concerns about that. The other one is sort of like a throwback. This is even when Dan and I were young men. There was a list called Sea Stompy that played Four Ninja the Deep Hours in a teamer list that was very good in its standard format at the time. It sort of used Tarmogoyf as your like aggro creature. This list is sort of trying to be reminiscent of that. I think it's pretty speculative myself. I did add a couple one drops to this, which is Hex Shrinker, the new one drop from Modern Horizons. I think the card is actually quite powerful. I'm not sure if it's good in this list. To try to pump up Tarmogoyf, I also snuck three Mishra's Baubles and some Serum Visions and a Flame Slash in there. There's only two Ninja of the Deep Hours. There's no black, so you can't play the new Ninja. But Ninja of the Deep Hours can still blink out an early Hex Drinker or Ferryseer. And obviously, if you get value out of your Kotal or Sprite, that always feels amazing. And then Tarmogoyf's kind of there as your beater to like speed up the clock. If you get ahead on cards, you know, you can play Tarmogoyf with a couple of these like one mana interactive spells up. And then because you're playing red, you get to play Lightning Bolt, which also can help speed up your clock.
So the red is only for the Lightning Bolt, is that correct?
And a Flame Slash.
So it's kind of like you're splashing them because we feel like the deck needs that to shore up a weakness?
Well, it's extra removal. And yeah, then it just gives you like closing speed. So you don't need to, you know, your Snapcaster Mage becomes an actual source of a way to finish the game as opposed to just a value creature.
Rug is a classic tempo deck in various formats. This is a little bit interesting in the sense normally, like for example, in Legacy, Rug Delver is a deck that is using red for, yeah, basically Bolts and Pyroblasts and not too much else. That deck is definitely built a little differently than this one. That is more of a focus on Threshold and Hooting Mandrels types cards. And this one's more focused on the like Snapcasters and Spellstutter sprites. But certainly the notion of splashing red for Bolt makes sense in this kind of shell. It really shores up your creature matchups. I do wonder if we could play Ren in 6, not because it's necessarily like the best card for the deck, but because it looks sweet and I haven't played it yet.
Let's just get it in there, sure.
Yeah.
I don't see how that fits at all with what this deck is trying to do.
It occurs your fetch lands and it pings their dudes. What more can you ask?
Well, it is a planeswalker that grows Tarmogoyf, so I guess there's something. But,
Dan, yeah. The last time you played against Ren in 6, you said you were jealous.
I was jealous because I Armageddon and then he got to get all his lands back and I didn't have any lands. So, okay, this list here, Hex Drinker is one that I think I want to keep an eye on. I don't think I want to return Hex Drinker to my hand with a ninja, but I'm interested in it as just like a Tarmogoyf replica, which I guess is kind of a rule that we do want in this deck.
Yeah, I mean, it's half Tarmogoyf, half, I mean, maybe, you know, True Name comes to mind. True Name Nemesis, for those of you who have not been not familiar with that card in Legacy, 1/3/1 protection from your opponent.
So the mix of spells that we have here, some of them are sorceries, like the Serum Visions, the Hex Drinker is a level up as a sorcery. Flame Slash is a sorcery, but then and then you have like Tarmogoyf is a sorcery. Then you have like your Incense Speed cantrips as well. Then you have your Bolts. Not too many counter spells. You have Spell Stutter, a couple of Pierces. So I mean, is this a tap out deck or is this just sort of like a you got a juke and weave and?
I mean, is it a tap out deck? The most expensive spell you have to tap out for costs 2 mana, so not really.
Well, you have 19 lands, so you will be tapping out for these.
Sure. Cards. It's gonna feel great. You have to play some amount of sorceries, I think, if you're gonna play Tarmogoyf, or you can't play it at all because you have to be able to make it big enough as a threat if you're trying to race control decks. If you're just playing as a 2-mana 2/3, that's not good enough. I don't believe so.
Yeah, I'm a believer in Tarmogoyf. I know he's fallen on hard times lately, but he's got the size, and I think you correctly turn to him as like a way to shore up something this deck is otherwise missing, which is closing speed or defense as the situation calls for. I've heard that he's actually a really good way to get a ninja through. Like, it's very hard to block Tarmogoyf. People just don't bother with it because they're like, why should I block? I'll just take the damage and, you know, I'm not in danger of dying. He's a good ninja enabler.
Yeah, makes sense. I don't think I tend to block Tarmogoyf. It's impossible to block it favorably.
But you chose to not use any graveyard, to not use the graveyard as a resource, really, with the exception of these Snapcaster Mages. You have, like, the cantrips, you have the Mishra's Baubles, and presumably the fetch lands. So was there consideration for, like, a Delve spell, or possibly Nimble Mongoose?
I did think about Nimble Mongoose. We actually were talking about it, and you said it wasn't playable, so I didn't bother bending my list around it. You could also play Thought Scour as a cantrip if you wanted. I do get worried about playing Delve spells and Tarmogoyf and Snapcaster Mage, especially in a deck like this. That's a little mana light, so you're typically going to have to fully Delve. You're not going to be able to leave sort of the good stuff around.
It's true that this list does look a little weak to a Rest in Peace, shutting off your Snapcasters and your Tarmogoyfs. If you add Delve spells, it gets even worse.
That was exactly my thought process. So my second sort of threat of choice was Hexdrinker. A, new card, so kind of fun to play around with it. B, it's a card that's relatively good early. You could imagine playing it into Ninja. That's fine. And you can imagine playing it late. Like, if you're flooded with, like Damon says, four or five lands, you can turn it into a creature that's immediately protected from instance, and you can eventually grow it into whatever the legacy staple is.
Just interesting, because this list is just playing so many, like, lower-powered cards than the legacy equivalent. Like, some of the modern decks today don't feel that much worse than legacy decks, and this one feels like you really are making some sacrifices, like having, you know, Days or Force of Will or the cantrips to really power through. Opensphere and Visions are just nowhere close.
Yes, that is very true.
You don't think Fairy Seer is going to break into legacy? That guy has a Serum Visions on a creature. He's basically a Serum Visions that attacks for damage.
Yeah, and Pondering Mage is basically ponder on a creature.
Yeah, exactly.
What more could you ask for? Show and tell. I'm going to put in my Pondering Mage.
So, David, I decisively said that Nimble Mongoose is a dead end in Modern, and sure enough, just today it showed up in the 5-0 lists in a shell very similar to the one that you were proposing with Nimble Mongooses and Thought Scour. So I was wrong. What do I know about the Mongoose? Like, I think actually I wanted to ask Damon about this. Like, I was thinking that the reason that the Mongoose would not be relevant for Modern is that, like, a 3-3 ground creature is pretty good in Legacy as long as it's not running into Gurmag Anglers. But in Modern, I would expect it to have trouble getting through. But, like, where is the strength of Nimble Mongoose as a card? Is it the size? Is it the shroud?
It's definitely both, in the sense that it resists all the typical removal spells. And it does actually get a decent clock, especially paired up with, like, a Delver that actually can chunk your opponent down quite rapidly. But, yeah, Legacy is less creature combat focused and more focused on stack interaction. And Modern is not quite the same. So I agree with some of your hesitation about using this card in Modern. And it's not like Rogue Delver is not in a great spot in Legacy these days either. Not too many people have been getting bitten by the goose.
Well, I mean, whoever this City of Cards is the name of the Magic Online player who got the 5-0, so props to them. They only played Mongoose as their one drop, and then they were looking mainly at two mana creatures, so Ice Fang, Tarmogoyf, Snapcaster, and then a little bit higher on the curve, they had like a Hooting Mandrills, an Obstructionist, and a couple of Seasoned Pyromancers, weirdly enough. So, yeah, I mean, maybe it's a question of, like, if the theory was that these creatures are all good enough on rate, and I can surround them with tempo pieces.
This is a brave MTGO player showing up to a Modern League with two Surgicals as their sideboard hate.
Yes.
But the list does look pretty sweet.
Yes. So I guess my worry in testing this Sea Stompy is that the card Fairy Seer might be a letdown without some kind of synergy. Like, just two ninjas makes me wonder if it's just, like, going to feel like a blank.
Mm.
Yeah, and I agree with
that. Sort of similar to Hexdrinker. I don't know if I believe in Hexdrinker. I'm willing to be proven wrong about that, but
Hexdrinker looks interesting. Like, I think nobody's really figured out if it's any good or not.
Yeah, you were tutoring for Hex Parasites. I was tutoring for Hex Drinkers with my Ranger Captain.
What's funny is there was one match I was playing Martyr Proc against Green Black featuring Hex Drinker, and we had a Hex Drinker Hex Parasite standoff. It was just the funniest thing ever.
Who won?
I think I wound up winning. It was close, though. It was just, I think, actually because of the Martyr angle. Hex Drinker chunking in for 6 a turn versus gaining 12 life off the Martyrs. Let the Martyr proc decks finishers close it out faster. But yeah, it was pretty funny. You get a standoff. And of course, if they ever get their guy to the final level, then Hex Parasite does not stop it anymore. It wasn't really clear who's hexing who in that battle.
My goodness. Just like of the list that were, or the sketches that we have in front of us, most of them feature Icefang and they all feature Fairy Seer. Some have ninjas and some instead have larger creatures like Tarmogoyf. I guess there isn't one that you've proposed to us, Dave, that is like a lot of ninjas. And I kind of just want to try that as well in addition to these. I was a skeptic of ninjas as an entire project going way back to the Travis Wu days. I just thought it was a silly concept. But, you know, again, I've been proven wrong about that. The ninjas have been showing up in a few different 5-0 lists for the past week or so. I think I saw Nassif was playing a deck on stream. I think he had a full set of Fallen Shinobis in his list. Some people have a full set of the Mist Syndicate Naga, the one that ninjutsus for 3. And when it connects for damage, it makes a copy of itself. So now you have, you know, now there are 2 of them.
Right.
And next turn, there's 4 of them or something. Where, yeah, you can't really ignore that card. So maybe there's something there. I mean, those lists, I think, were only using those 2 ninjas, like the rare ones, the Mist Syndicate and the Fallen Shinobi. But I've seen other lists that ignore those entirely and are just playing the Ingenious Infiltrator and the Deep Hours. So I guess, like, ninjas are, they're back. And I think Icefang maybe is the key to all of this. Like, having this evasive value creature that can, in a pinch, defend you, then also plays at flash speed for some reason.
Yeah, and by the way, for those of you that... Dan made a subtle point, and he referenced Star Wars the Phantom Menace, which, while not a great movie, came out in a critical time of our youth that we just sort of love some of the quotes from it.
All jokes are better when explained. I trust the youth of today's internet to understand prequel memes.
I'm not sure. Anyway, back on track. Yeah, I mean, Pure Ninjas sounds interesting to me. There are definitely, like, there was a post on the Modern subreddit where somebody was talking about Miss Syndicate Naga, which I think was the Naga or whatever card I was referring to earlier. And it does seem like that guy can really take over a game in a hurry.
So, Dave, what do you think about that, the Mist Syndicate and the Fallen Shinobi? I think you kind of shied away from them in your builds.
I think Fallen Shinobi is a card that is on Modern power level. Whether how many 4-mana spells you can play in your list is always a big question. I am not a believer in the Naga. The 3-mana ninjutsu to get a 3/1 creature is just nowhere near where you need to be, I think. Like, you're concerned about tapping out on 2. You kept saying over and over again, oh, we're tapping out on 2, so we're vulnerable. Now you're tapping out on 3, and you only get a 3/1 to show for it. I mean...
But it's untapped, and it...
All right, well, we were literally just saying, you know what we don't like is a 3-mana 3/3 creature.
Are you familiar with exponential growth, Dave?
Yes, that's true. If we're allowed to just hit them every turn with these Nagas, then it is a great card.
The list that runs them happens to run 2 Force of Negation and 2 Nihil Spellbomb, which gives you some nice interaction ability, even if you're tapped out. Maybe that's the key to using this effectively.
Perhaps.
Yeah, still the very early days of playing these ninja lists, so maybe none of them are good, or maybe all of them are good. I'm excited to try them out. Any final thoughts on the builds? Any questions we want to have answered about particular cards as we go into our testing this week?
I think the question of how often the ninja can hit after it's in play is really important. You know, when we're talking about investing even more mana into the 3/1 or the Fallen Shinobi, you really want that second hit to happen. Otherwise, it's functionally just doing its thing once. You could call it a come into play ability. And I think Dan brought that up as, you know, if you're spending your 2 mana, sure, you get your 2/3 and you get a card. But if it never hits again, that's not that powerful. So I think that's something to keep an eye on, which is why I list with, like, Fatal Push as their proactive removal, or Lightning Bolt are a little more attractive, I think.
Yeah. I'm just curious about Fallen Shinobi. Does that card win the game when it hits? You know, what percent of the time? It needs to be a powerful effect to make it worthwhile, and it might be.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's competing with Cryptic Command, so, you know, it has to be quite powerful to be worthwhile. Because Cryptic Command is always good, and Fallen Shinobi has a series of conditions that have to happen before you get your 4-mana value.
Well, it's a good size. It has good combat stats. It's hard to cleanly kill it. I mean, you need Path to Exile, basically, to kill Fallen Shinobi. And people don't play 5/4 creatures anymore. So I think that maybe the reason why that card has been seeing some success is just because it's large. Like, you don't have to worry about connecting with it again. Like, it does that itself just by being huge.
It's like a effectively 4 CMC creature that dodges Fatal Push. There was a time when Thing in the Ice was a big thing where people were playing Flame Slash sometimes, and that would answer this card. But that is not a super popular card these days. I'm intrigued.
Yeah, questions that I have for the list are Fairy Seer in particular. I just want to know if that's worth a card in general. And the Counterspell Suite is one that I'm just wondering. Are we going to be able to find a package of Counterspells that we're happy with as main deck cards against the format? Or should we just be expecting to be like frequently sliding in and out of those? And the Ice Fang, I'm just wondering if we'll ever get Death Touch or if we'll need the Death Touch. It would be nice. I don't know. Some ice would be nice. Are you thinking that we should play like Prismatic Vista to get the Snowlands, Dave, or just rely on regular fetches?
I think I would propose 2 or 3 Prismatic Vista in every list. The green splash is so light, you can just play like 1 Breeding Pool, 1 Overgrown Tomb, 1 Forest, something like that.
Okay.
Has like the Magic community solved Prismatic Vista yet? Like which decks want to play it and how many?
No, absolutely not.
Are we close? Like, I still don't, it seems like, you know, for example, Blue-White Control would maybe want 1 or 2. In Legacy, I might want 4 even, but I'm not sure yet.
I believe that right now, Modern is in sort of a fog of uncertainty. There hasn't been a major tournament yet. There is like a team SCG event this weekend that I expect to be dominated by Bridgevine, but the next month is going to be in flux. You know, that's a month before the next Pro Tour, which is also Modern. There might be some action, some movement to the banned and restricted. But it's hard to know what's really happening with all these 5-0s because they're curated and people are just experimenting.
Yeah. There will be an MCQ for Modern at Magic Fest Seattle on Friday, and I wonder if those lists will be published online somewhere.
Oh, are you going to play?
I'll be playing Modern Horizon Sealed.
Okay. Yeah, I think we have some good lists here to test. I'm excited to ninjutsu some things into play, draw some cards, and counter some things. Any final thoughts, guys?
If we can make people want even more for Containment Priest in Modern, that will be we'll be doing our work. Because that card will mess up ninjas like no other.
Yes.
No. It's kind of funny. I don't think I want that to happen. So maybe Containment Priest is a little too oppressive. Maybe we just need a Magus of the Rest in Peace or something, like the Collector Oof.
Magus of the Rest in Peace.
I don't think that's going to do it. I think we need to be banning cards, but...
That's why they pay professionals to come up with the card names. We have the Naga whatever guy and the Magus of the Rest in Peace. If it were up to us.
Yes. All right. Well, I think that'll do it then for episode 8 of Faithless Brewing. So we'll be back next week with some of our results with these lists and hopefully some new cards, some new brews. So see you guys then.
Cool. Talk to you guys later.
Peace.
That'll do it for episode 8 of the Faithless Brewing Podcast. All of the decks that we discussed today are posted in the show notes. That is to say, they are in the episode description in your podcast app, and on the Modern subreddit at r/modernmagic. Faithless Brewing is a listener-supported show, so if you like what you heard today, you can help us out by giving us your feedback. You can leave us a review on iTunes, we really appreciate that. Follow us on Twitter at FaithlessMTG, and tell a friend and help us spread the word. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.